Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Jason Lipschutz, and I'm an associate editor and the Pop Shop blog editor of Billboard.com. Based in New York on the other line in Los Angeles is the 50 Shades of Grey to my NBA All-Star Weekend. Keith Caulfield, how's it going, Keith?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Are you seeing 50 Shades of Grey this weekend?
No, God, no.
Because I was, I mean, I didn't know, and I said I'm the NBA All-Star Weekend because that's what I'll be doing this weekend. I'll be watching a lot of basketball.
Yeah, I'm not doing either of those things, but I'll take it. It's good.
Are you going to watch the SNL 40th anniversary thing? That's like the other big thing, the pop culture thing this weekend.
Valentine's Day is also the big thing this weekend. So,
well, yeah, just in terms of pop culture.
Right, in terms of pop culture, yes. I mean, I guess I'll probably end up watching some of the SNL thing. I think it's on what? Is it on, I guess it's on Saturday night?
I think it's on Sunday night in a little change-up. Anyway.
It's Sunday Night Live. Anyway, moving on. Sorry.
Before we begin, Keith, I want to thank everyone once again who tuned in for our Pop Shop Podcast live post-Grammy show a couple nights ago. It was very fun. It was very fun for Keith and I, and I'm back on the East Coast. It's very chilly here. I already missed that. Los Angeles sunshine.
It makes you feel any better. It's supposed to be in the 80s here today.
That doesn't make me feel better at all. That makes me feel worse, Keith.
Oh, okay.
But we have a packed show, as we always do. We're going to be talking about Taylor Swift, Sam Smith, Tove Lo, 4 or 5 Seconds, Ellie Goulding, Missy Elliott. And then later in the show, we have a very special guest, Cody Simpson, stopped by the Pop Shop Podcast to talk about his new music. He actually played some new music for us a little bit ago. He chatted about his change in musical direction as well as his work with Justin Bieber. So that was a fun interview, and we will get to that in a bit. Also, before we begin, some quick housekeeping notes. If you have any questions for us, hit us up on Twitter. He's Keith_Caulfield. I'm at Jason Lipschutz. And if you like the show, give us a rating or write a review on iTunes. We always appreciate that. And hey, subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode. It's just the smart thing to do. So, Keith, are you ready?
Yes.
We got to talk about Taylor Swift first, because it's been a couple weeks since we've checked in on the Billboard 200 albums chart. And
it
hey,
has,
look
actually,
at that.
Yeah. It truly has. We're not lying. It actually has been a couple weeks since we talked about the Billboard 200, because we've had like podcasts that have not been about the charts the past few weeks.
Exactly. And you know what? The last time we talked about it, I have a feeling that Taylor Swift's 1989 was at number one. And hey, look at that. Taylor Swift's 1989 is at number one, spending its 11th week at number one. Keith, Let's break it down. What is it selling these days? Like, is it still just going really strong, or is it just kind of been that quiet time period in the album release schedule where it can just dominate?
Well, here's the interesting thing. This week, in the week ending February 8th, the album that actually sold more copies was not Taylor Swift's 1989 album. It was actually the Now 53 compilation, which sold 99,000 copies. Taylor Swift's 1989 was the second biggest selling album of the week, with 77,000 copies sold. All of these statistics are according to Nielsen Music. So why is Taylor Swift number one on the Billboard 200 chart for the 11th week? Well, instead of Now 53, it's because Taylor Swift also has track sales helping her, because the Billboard 200 is a multi-metric consumption chart, blending together album sales, track equivalent album purchases, and streaming equivalent album purchases. I mean, not purchases, but streams. So The Now album doesn't have that going for it, whereas Taylor Swift does, and that's how Taylor is number one for the 11th week. It is still selling well, yes, and the tracks are doing quite well as well, but that's the reason why it's number one this week. And yes, so there you go. I've answered your question.
Well, there you go. I mean, in your Billboard 200 chart analysis that ran this morning, Wednesday morning, you mentioned that only a couple albums have been number one for 10 plus weeks.
Well, not just a couple. A lot of albums, you know, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, not that many, but quite a few albums have been number one for more than 10 weeks. But in recent times, not
that
many.
Yeah, I was going to say... I know. Well, that's what I was going to say. Oh, since
I was just, 2000, I don't know. People misinterpret what I write all the time and then come at me on Twitter.
Do they really?
Well,
who's coming at you on Twitter, man?
Well, okay, people rightfully came at me last week when I forgot to say what the number two album was in my story, and that's a complete blunder on my part, and I'm still stinging because of that.
But Hey, we're all human.
Mm. We're all human, born to make mistakes.
So Keith, I mean, some of these other albums that you mentioned recently being number one for 10 plus weeks are Taylor Swift, Fearless, of course. People forget how big of an album Fearless was, I think, because it was a couple years ago and she's had other big albums since then, like Speak Now and Red. But Fearless, the only one to win Album of the Year so far for Taylor. And I think, how many weeks was it number one?
11.
In front of you?
That's the hook this week. 1989 ties Fearless as Taylor Swift's longest running number one album.
Okay, so how many weeks? I mean, let's look into your chart crystal ball. This is a total guess, but an educated guess, I would say. How many weeks do you see 1989 continuing to be number one?
Oh, who knows? I mean, we won't. It won't be number one next week, most likely. So there's 1 week that it won't be number one.
Who's knocking it out?
Excuse me?
Who's knocking it out of the penthouse?
Well, it could either be the 50 Shades of Grey soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
Because, what better way to celebrate your Valentine's Day weekend than with 50 Shades of Grey? Or maybe Sam Smith's album.
That was a little shade of grey right there.
It was just shady. Or it could be Sam Smith's In the Lonely Hour as it builds from the momentum earned from the Grammy Awards last Sunday, where Sam Smith won 4 awards, and all 4 of those awards were on air. So clearly his album is going to benefit from that as well. So I don't have prognostications exactly on how much Sam is going to sell, but the 50 Shades of Grey soundtrack could do like over 180,000 copies.
Wow.
Just pure album sales. That's not counting whatever streams and track sales it may have. So that's kind of going to be difficult to beat, but hey, you never know. The Grammy effect is quite large, so we'll know better in the next day or two, and maybe by the time you guys are listening to this, there'll be a story up online that'll have slightly more details.
Well, let's skip ahead a little bit, just because we're talking about the 50 Shades of Grey soundtrack, and one thing a soundtrack in modern times, I would say, desperately wants to have is a breakout hit, a legitimate hit on the Hot 100, and that's what this 50 Shades of Grey soundtrack has with Ellie Goulding's Love Me Like You Do. Moves into the top 10 of the Hot 100 this week. It's kind of quietly snuck up the Hot 100 chart. And Keith, I mean, this looks like a legitimate hit, right?
I've now brought up the Hot 100 in front of me because I did not have it up until just now. It goes 14-9. Didn't the video come out last week with like never before seen scenes from the film, or was it the week before? I feel like the music video is helping, but it is a legitimate hit. It's doing well, both in terms of streams and sales. The radio is, catching up as well. So it's not one of those hits where it's like really weirdly imbalanced, among the three sectors of points that make up its, overall total on the Hot 100.
Yeah.
It's doing well across the board. So yeah, I'm surprised that this movie has a soundtrack with like hit singles on it. Between the Beyonce remix, her sort of new re-envisioning of Crazy in Love that accompanied the trailer last year and it's on the soundtrack. And then you also have the Weeknd track, which is doing well. You have the Ellie Goulding song, which is now top 10, which is kind of nuts. And then you have like weird things like Annie Lennox's I've Put a Spell on You is on this album.
Yeah.
And she performed that on the Grammy Awards. It's also on her
Super
own album,
strange.
Nostalgia. So yeah, it's kind of weird how this movie, of all things, is going to have this really big album with a bunch of hit singles.
And the ironic part is that last year at this time, the Divergent soundtrack came out, and that had a single by Ellie Goulding, by Beating Heart. And that song and that soundtrack just did not do that well. And, Ellie's come back. She still hasn't put out a new album or anything. Come back with another soundtrack song, Love Me Like You Do, and that's one really is taken off.
I suppose, the difference is, maybe 50 Shades of Grey is reaching, audiences that wouldn't necessarily, are more into purchasing tracks, and maybe that's reaching a different kind of demographic than Divergent would. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, it seems like this is almost reacting like the first Hunger Games album or the first Twilight album. It's that kind of blockbuster book series turned movie event, and like anything attached to it is going to be huge. But that usually doesn't translate into hit singles, and that's actually happening now. That's what's really unique about this.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Keith.
Jason.
Let's talk, while we're on the Hot 100, while you have it in front of you, I want to bring up very quickly Missy Elliott back on the Hot 100, and we talked about her a little bit about the Super Bowl because she was rumored to be coming out with Katy Perry. She did indeed come out with Katy Perry, performed three old songs.
New to most people that were watching it, probably.
Yeah. and they shouldn't be. Come on, get your freak on, work it, Lose Control. All amazing, incredible tracks. And a couple of them back on the Hot 100, Keith.
Yeah, Work It re-enters at number 35, and Get Your Freak On re-enters at number 40.
That's awesome.
Which is crazy.
That makes me so happy as a Missy Elliott fan.
Yeah, she had a huge. I don't have her overall sales gain yet because I haven't finished doing the math yet. But obviously there will be a story up by the time people are listening to this podcast.
Yeah.
Just for reference, Work It debuts on our digital songs chart at number 9. And you're probably wondering, well, how can it debut? It's an old song. Well, the digital songs chart started in, like, I think 2004, and Work It came out before that and had already finished its sort of run in terms of being a popular track. So finally, now, because of the Super Bowl, it debuts at number 9. It sold 83,000 downloads last week. That was a 300% sales gain. And then Get Your Freak On debuts at 14 with 78,000. That's up 316%. And Lose Control, featuring Sierra and Fat Man Scoop, debuts at number 18 with 59,000 downloads, and that's up 257%. Clearly, Missy was the big winner in terms of the performances from the show. Katy Perry did just fine, but Katy Perry is an artist where most people probably already owned a lot of her stuff because she's such a sort of recent vintage artist that is very digital, whereas Missy Elliott has been basically effectively off the radar for like 10 years. So everyone is kind of like discovering this Missy Elliott woman, I think, to a certain degree.
It's pretty unbelievable. And
unbelievable.
I mean, what's been cool about this whole process is, I don't know if you heard, but it sounds like she and Timbaland are back in the studio. This has been a reawakening process for her as an artist. She's talked about how surprised she's been at the reception she's gotten. And hopefully we'll get some new music from her too soon. It's been almost a decade, which is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, her last album, I think, was The Cookbook in 2005.
So
it's been almost 10 years. Yeah.
Unbelievable. So, Keith, let's go to a new segment that we have here on the Pop Shop Podcast. We've been kicking around for a little bit. And because we talk about the Hot 100's top 10, and we're going to get to that in a second, but let's bump this up a little bit. These are the songs that are not in the top 10 yet, but could be getting there shortly and are worth keeping an eye on. We're going to try to do this every week to give people a little bit better idea of what's going on the lower reaches of the Hot 100. This is Soon to Be Hits. All right. We probably had some music there, so that's cool.
I think so. I really like that groove. That was fun. And there's probably no groove at all to it.
Soon to Be Hits. Keith, let's kick it off. You have one.
Which one do you want me to start with?
Let's start with, we talked about Taylor. Let's talk, let's start with Style.
Yeah, so Style is certainly on its way to becoming a top 10 hit. It's the third official single from Taylor's 1989 album. It's primed for a big jump on next week's Billboard Hot 100, as the song's music video is slated to premiere later this week. Taylor teased it with an Instagram video the other day. She may have done it again since. The song this week on the chart is already off to a great start. It moves 29 to 18 on the Hot 100. Its airplay has been building the past few weeks, and it was building before it was even officially selected or announced as a single. People were just that red hot for the song. And with its rise up the chart this week, because it jumps into the top 20, it becomes her 33rd top 20 hit. And just as a point of note, That is as many top 20 hits as Michael Jackson has earned. So,
Hey-o.
Fun stat for you. It's not like a record or anything, but it's just like, hey, Taylor Swift has just as many top 20 hits as Michael Jackson.
Unbelievable. And Keith, we've been getting a couple, maybe it was just me, but I've been getting a couple tweets about this song saying like, why haven't you guys talked about Style yet? And
well,
now we are. Now we are. And the thing is that this is never really, before the video announcement, I don't think it was ever officially declared the third single from 1989, but obviously a fan favorite. And like you said a second ago, this music video is just going to make it skyrocket even more. Can't wait for that on Friday. Keith, what is next on Soon to Be Hits?
What did you want to talk about yours now, or am I going to talk about my second one?
Let's alternate. Let me talk about Talking Body by Tove Lo. It moves 95 to 83 in its second week on the Hot 100 chart.
One of your favorite artists, by the way.
One of my favorite artists, and the thing about this song is that, Habits was a top 10 hit, obviously, for Tove Lo. It put her on a lot of people's radar. But Queen of the Clouds is such a strong album. It's such a fun pop album. I can't imagine it not producing, maybe not as big of a hit, but something of a follow-up hit. And it looks like Talking Body has a good shot at being that. The video was released on January 12th. It has 4.6 million views. This is just getting started again. It's only in the 80s on the Hot 100, but definitely worth keeping an eye on. And Keith, you have one more for us.
Yes, this will be our third and final selection of the week. It's Sam Smith's Lay Me Down. It debuts at number 75 on the Hot 100 this week, powered in part by its new one-take music video, which premiered on February 5th. If you haven't seen it, check it out. It's really cool. It goes from like a... I can't tell you. I'll spoil it, but it's...
Yeah, don't spoil it. It's very cool, though.
It's very cool, and it's very surprising, and... when you watch it more than once going, okay, where did they put the people and how did they, it's one of those videos. Also notable, is a funky dance remix of the song that was, officially released and promoted through Sam Smith's, social network channels, by Paul Wolford. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. It was loaded to his, SoundCloud account last weekend. It already has more than 125,000 plays. And I wouldn't be surprised if this song actually popped onto our dance club songs chart in the next few weeks because of this particular remix and perhaps other remixes that may follow. So do check that out on Sam Smith's SoundCloud and watch for Lay Me Down to move up the Hot 100 in the coming weeks.
Totally, totally, totally. Cannot overlook any Sam Smith song these days. Thank you, Keith. That was Soon to Be Hits. All right, so speaking of Sam Smith, let's quickly get to the Grammys a little bit. We talked about the show itself, but we indicated a couple days ago on our post-Grammy show that some of these songs and albums that did well or were performed are going to get some bumps on our charts. And so far, Keith, in your chart column this morning, it seems like Sam Smith and Ed Sheeran were the big winners album-wise. Is that fair to say?
Well, I mean, those were the two albums in the top 10 that are the most, because I run down the top 10 each week
sure.
in my story. So those happen to be the ones in the top 10. I don't have the full recap, much like the Super Bowl thing, since it's still early in the morning and haven't finished all of my math equations yet.
Haven't done your homework. It's like the AP calculus teacher is going around collecting. It's like, Keith, where's your chart homework?
It's also 10:20 in the morning on the West Coast, so
yeah,
let's not slam me too much here. there's a lot of significant song sales gains. For example, Ed Sheeran's Thinking Out Loud, which he sang on the show, it's up 22% in sales. It sold 269,000. The Rihanna, Kanye, Paul McCartney track, 4 or 5 Seconds, is up 31% in sales. I mean, we can go down the list here. There's a ream of songs that show huge gains from the Grammy Awards. We will see bigger gains, perhaps, next week after we have a full 7 days worth of impact from the show. Because the gains that we're seeing today, that we're talking about today, all happen the night of the show, because Nielsen's tracking week ends on Sunday night every week, and the Grammy Awards aired on Sunday night. So it was basically people reacting on iTunes and other digital services, because, they're not exactly running to, Target to do some shopping that night after the show. So, we're going to see a lot of casual, you know, casual purchases of the Sam Smith physical CD this week. You know, maybe people picking up the Beck album, which won album of the year, Morning Phase. So we will see more impact next week, definitely.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Rihanna, Kanye, Paul McCartney song 4 or 5 Seconds, and which was my pick to get a big bump after the Grammy Awards.
You did it.
It seems like it. It's now in the top 10 of the Hot 100, man.
Yeah, it's Paul McCartney's. So it goes top 10 on the Hot 100. And you know, obviously, it's cool that you know Rihanna and Kanye West have yet another top 10 single. That's cool. By sure. The way, it jumps 15 to 6 on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. And yeah, so yes, it's another top 10 for Rihanna, another top 10 for Kanye. That's cool. But it's also Paul McCartney's highest charting single since 1984, when No More Lonely Nights peaked at number 6.
31 years.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
A while. So it's a little crazy. But yeah, there you go. It's nice to have friends like Rihanna and Kanye West.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the big news this week was not the 4 or 5 Seconds stuff. In terms of Kanye, it was the whole him almost rushing the stage and interrupting Beck, which we thought on Sunday night was kind of like a joke. And then he comes out and says, no, I was serious.
And then he just makes it all crappy.
Yeah. And you know what? I honestly, and he said some more stuff this morning on Ryan Seacrest. He kind of backtracked a little bit and said that he never meant to undermine Beck, and he misspoke about that. He was undermining the Grammys. I don't really want to talk about it anymore. I'm just kind of sick of it. It's been like nonstop.
What he
Kanye
should have just said was like, look, I was drunk when I said that after the show. I'd had a couple drinks and I was, you know, flying off the handle. And
he did say the I think Seacrest asked him why he went up on stage, and he said that the voices inside his head told him to.
Oh, good.
So I was like, all right. I was
like, at least you're honest about those voices in your
yeah,
head.
Yeah, exactly.
We all have voices sometimes, you know, some of them are just louder than others, and some of them
some
tell
like,
you to go on stage at the Grammy Awards.
Yeah, mine are like, you know, when I'm in line to get a salad for lunch, they're like, get some pepperoni pizza. I'll be like, oh, yeah, okay.
Right.
But yeah, they don't tell me to rush the stage at the Grammys. I don't really want to talk about it just because there's been so many hot takes and think pieces online.
Here's my question. I want to know, and maybe this came up in his Ryan Seacrest interview. Did Ryan ask him if he's a voting member of the Academy?
I don't think he did. He definitely didn't, the Seacrest, but I don't think anyone's asked
I would like
that.
To know, you know, because frankly, change comes from within.
It's true.
And if you're going to be upset with the Recording Academy about how they vote for particular categories at the Grammy Awards, you should probably be
body.
A voting member. And it doesn't, I mean, he only needs like, I think, eight credits on commercially released products. So he was eligible many, many moons ago.
It's a good question. It's a good point.
Well, there's a whole lot of major recording artists who are not actually voting members of the Academy because, you know, for whatever reason, you know, most people don't understand how it works. And I think, you know, if you're going to complain, it's kind of like complaining about, oh man, Obama did this. I'm like, did you vote for him? Did you vote? Did you not? You know, don't complain unless you're actually part of the process. And then, you know, it's, so that's what I have to say. I want to know if he's actually a voting member. And if he's not, then you really need to scale back your kind of griping because you're not actually helping the process. And if
it's
you
true.
Want more pop, let me just say this and I'll shut up. If you want more pop, and hip hop, and if you feel that like certain kinds of genres are like getting like the short end of the stick in certain categories at the Grammy Awards, then you need to, you know, empower like a younger generation of voters to join the Academy. Like, I want to know if Beyonce and Jay-Z are voting members, you know?
Yeah.
They've got like 70 million Grammys between all of them. Do they vote? Okay, I'll shut up now.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. It's, It definitely is a great point that, you know, they if they have that opportunity, they better be voting or else they're
all you have to do is fill out a form and you pay a little bit of a fee. That's it. But I'm sure a lot of artists are like, I don't want to pay. Like,
why did you hear also in that Ryan Seacrest interview on Wednesday morning?
I haven't heard.
Kanye said that he and Taylor Swift are hitting the studio together.
Because, you know, that makes perfect sense.
So there you go. I feel like it's like... And whenever that music drops, like the clouds will open up and the sun will shine. And
I look forward to a Beck Kanye collaboration in about 5 years then.
Oh, man. Keith, we got to move on to our Cody Simpson interview. Once again, Cody Simpson, a teen pop star who is going in a little bit of a different direction. He has a new album out this spring. It is called Free. It is more influenced than anything by Jack Johnson and Jason Mraz and pop singer-songwriters of that ilk. He talked about changing his style and working with Justin Bieber. He did cut a collaborative album, it seems, with Bieber, and he answered if that will ever see the light of day.
Dun, dun, dun.
Here it is, Cody Simpson on the Pop Shop Podcast.
And she loves me. Does she love me not? She says she loves me. Has she forgotten that she loves me? Love me one more time.
Cody Simpson, thanks for stopping by, man.
Dude, thanks for having me, man.
You just played some songs from the new album.
Played a couple tunes.
Free. It's coming out later this year.
Yeah.
And such a change up for you in terms of what you're offering musically now. Do you feel a different level of enthusiasm about this project than you have about, you know, your other projects, your album?
Oh, mate, honestly, like, now I feel free, you know what I mean? I feel like liberated, and I feel so much more enthusiastic. I just feel as though, you know, because I'm writing for myself, and I'm just writing on the guitar, and when I'm at Cisco Adler, like, we just, like, vibe so quickly, and ended up just, you know, starting, like, wrote an album in a couple of weeks, and we're starting to roll out some of the tunes now, and I'm just stoked for people to hear what, you know, I have to offer, truly, you know what I mean? Not what sort of other people have to offer for me, but what I have to offer, you know what I mean? Like, personally, and let it flow straight out of me to the world, and to now be doing it independently, and sort of to be starting my own label and to be distributing everything through that, is a really cool feeling, and eventually to hopefully be able to, like, sign other artists that kind of want to take the same route that I did, with sort of branching out from the major label tree and sort of carving your own tree a little bit, you know.
So
and,
yeah, I'm curious as to that decision about going independent, in terms of going away from major label life. Did you feel like that was an absolutely necessary move to accomplish what you wanted to?
I don't think it was absolutely necessary. Like, you know, I had there were other opportunities, mm-hmm. for me to take from other homes, but I didn't want to go down that route. I just figured, like, I wanted to be in control of my own destiny, you know, and I wanted to be in control of my own music and the way that it was, that the way that it was rolled out, the way it was promoted, the way it was marketed, to be now just very, very close with my own team, and to be building such a great team around my project. It's cool. We're all young. We're all, like, just, like, pretty much, like, under 30, like, doing just, like, starting a new generation of music people and of creative people, and the world of music that I'm transitioning into is a very, like, independent and free world from the Jack Johnsons, the Ben Harpers, and, like, I mean, like, it's very, very organic and just, you know, and free-flowing. And the best way I thought for me to do that was just to go independent. And I feel so much better now because we get to not have to conform to anything or anybody, and not have to conform to, like, this is what's going to work on radio, or this is what's going to work for the masses. It's like, what's going to work for me, and how can I share that with the audience, you know?
I give you credit because it's not like you were unsuccessful doing what you did.
No,
but, like,
no, that's for sure.
And that's
yeah.
the thing is, like, yeah. you have, like, millions of fans who, you know, and you've played to thousands of people at, yeah. at a time and in your live
for
show.
For sure. But what I'm lucky and what's very fortunate is that I never truly had a hit as a younger artist. Like, I never actually had, like, a top five, like, you know, radio, you know, song.
So you see looking back, you see that as a fortunate thing.
I see definitely a fortuitous thing because it's not as though everyone knows. Like, some people will see me and know who I am, but have never heard any of my songs. So that gives me outlet to sort of introduce them to my music for the first time in the way that I want to, as opposed to everyone having known like a song that I did 2 years ago, you know?
Yeah.
And obviously my fans know my music, and they're going to grow with me, and they're very accepting of where I'm headed. And because they're growing with me, and those who were 14 when I was 14 are now like 18, 19, 20, and like that stuff now, you know what I mean? And it's cool. Like, because when I'm 21, they're going to be 21. I'm 25, they're going to be 25. They're going to want that stuff. They're going to want to come and like sit at, you know, an outdoor festival and like listen to music, you know?
Yeah,
I
mean, you've described this as the first step of a long journey. It sounds like,
yeah.
You know, no matter what happens with Free, and it sounds like you're in it for the long haul.
Yeah,
in
for terms sure.
Of committing to this kind of sound. And
for sure.
This artistry.
And the thing was, is like, some people were like, well, what if it doesn't work? I'm like, with this stuff, there's no way that it doesn't work. You know, whether it sells 50 records or like, you know, 500,000, it's like, it's not like you put a song out and if it doesn't go top five on radio, it was a failure. It's like not everyone has heard it yet, and it's like a growth. It's like a steady growth. You know what I mean? And hopefully by my third or fourth album now, starting this one being, you know, my so-called first, like independently, hopefully by the third or fourth, you know, maybe it might be bigger and more popular and stuff. But it's a long ride, you know what I mean? So
yeah. I mean, you mentioned Cisco Adler as a producer on this project.
Yeah.
And you know, the songs sound great. I'm curious, you know, one of your friends, one of your very famous friends, Justin Bieber, how instrumental was he in terms of like just kind of talking about this stuff and being like, you know, because he's had a transition in terms of his music, especially with like Journals from a couple years ago and what he's working on now.
Yeah. We actually, last year, we actually did an entire acoustic album.
Yeah.
Of which I don't totally know what's going to happen with that, because we both sort of made a mutual decision to like get our own projects out before that. But now we're sort of going in such different musical directions. But we did put out something online on like Spotify and
which
on,
did very
on
well.
SoundCloud, Home to Mama, which you know, I think gained a lot of traction. It was cool because it definitely was musically on my side of the table, which was cool because I got to play guitar and yeah. Well, it was cool because like he would riff and I would like copy it on the my electric. But I think during the process of making that acoustic album, I definitely did realize that I needed to go down my own lane. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that was like very natural for me, because I was just like writing all these riffs, and I was like, wow, I didn't realize how much I can actually hold my own and create, because I sort of was going in and to cut songs and stuff, and then like to actually now be able to just go in the studio with just nothing and start from scratch and create a riff and then write a song to it and stuff. I think that actual acoustic album process was sort of the first thing that kind of triggered, And a lot of people have been telling me that's what I need to be doing, you know, for years now. And you know, it just takes some time growing up to realize that. And it's where I started. And then you kind of, you do the rounds of like experimenting and learning who you are. And then you sort of usually come back to your roots. So,
yeah. Do you think we'll ever get to hear that acoustic album? I mean, it makes sense for you guys to focus on your individual projects first, but
yeah, possibly. You know, I don't make any promises yet.
Yeah.
But you know, you definitely hear something more in the future, whether it's, you know, on my album or, you know, might like redo one of them.
I mean, obviously you guys have huge fan bases. This could be kind of a fun thing to just toss out and say like, hey, yeah.
No,
by the
for
way.
Sure, for sure. I'm always open to. Doing, you know, once I establish my own music for what it is, I can kind of go outside the box a little bit and do other things. I'm very good friends with Martin Garrix, is one of my best friends in the world.
Yeah.
And he was like, why don't you cut vocals on one of my, like, you know, EDM tracks? And I was like, at first I was like, well, it's not really where I'm going, but it's like, if I establish my own music, you can kind of like go and, you know, because Ed did one too, you know, so it was cool. Yeah. I know I'll never be the apple of your eye, but I'll
pick you a flower if you like. So be on the lookout for Cody Simpson's new album, Free. Like I said, it should be out this spring. And thanks again to him for stopping by the Pop Shop Podcast. Keith.
Yes.
Are you ready?
I am.
chart stat of the week.
Okay, so when I looked up this particular number one hit that I'm going to be talking about, I was flabbergasted that it was number one 45 years ago, because it doesn't seem like it's that old of a song. But incredibly, 45 years ago this week, on February 14th, 1970, Sly and the Family Stone's Thank You for Letting Me Be Myself Again hit number one on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. It was actually a double-sided single. So it was actually Thank You for Letting Me Be Myself Again / Everybody is a Star hit number one. It was the second number one hit for the very funky group, which previously led the list with Everyday People in 1969. And that incredible bass line in Thank You for Letting Me, the
So good.
In fact, so good that it was later sampled in Janet Jackson's number two hit, Rhythm Nation, which came out in 1989.
Of course.
And then also referenced in any number of other songs, but also particularly well referenced in Brandy's number two hit, another one, Sitting Up in My Room. It wasn't a direct sample,
yeah,
but it was kind of a clearly kind
interpolation.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, you hear those songs that kind of echo something, it's very clear. So anyway, there you go. It's just, that's a simple, easy chart stat of the week. 45 years ago this week, Sly and the Family Stone were number one with Thank You for Letting Me Be Myself Again.
And thank you, Keith, for being yourself and delivering that great chart stat of the week. All right, that is going to do it for us at the Pop Shop Podcast. It feels like, I got to say, Keith, it feels like a decompression kind of week and a moment, because now the
You're
Super Bowl's
me.
Done, the Grammys are done, we worked our butts off, and we still are, because there's, you know, a lot of stuff coming up. The Oscars, of course, festival season right around the corner, and then soon it'll be summer, but it's like a nice like little breather week, and I hope you enjoyed it on the Pop Shop Podcast. Thanks again to Cody Simpson for stopping by. Keith, do you have any parting words?
I do not.
All right, let's listen to my favorite Sly and the Family Stone song, Family Affair. Thank you again for listening and being part of our family at the Pop Shop Podcast, and take care. Of course you're all broke down. It's a family affair. It's a family affair. It's a family affair.